Hello and welcome to Inside Education. We're online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
Some composer thought about creating that mood. How did he do it? Like, what's in the music? What makes it? How do the sounds work to make us feel that?
We'll hear about how teachers go about teaching children to listen to music. But first, Barry Hennessy brings us details of changes to education which came up in this week's budget.
Hello again, Sean. Well, it's only fair to say that many in the education sector probably breathed something of a sigh of relief last Monday when the cuts to next year's education budget were significantly less than feared. Net savings in the education sector in 2012 will amount to €76 million, a reduction of 1.7% compared to this year. As with all of the cuts announced this week, the proverbial devil is in the detail. With regard to teacher allocations, for example, the government has been able to secure positive headlines for holding the pupil-teacher ratio at this year's levels. However, one significant measure that will have real implications in disadvantaged schools over the next 3 years is the withdrawal of nearly 430 posts granted before 2005. These are so-called legacy posts, a description which has antagonised many teachers in those schools where the needs are still as great, if not greater, than they were when the posts were first allocated. At primary level, the standard pupil-teacher ratio remains at 28 to 1. In DESH Band 1 schools, a new ratio of 22 to 1 will replace the existing top-up arrangements. There will, though, be phased adjustments to the numbers of students required for teacher allocations to small primary schools, and these schools are now being encouraged to consider amalgamating. The Modern Languages Initiative in primary schools is being scrapped, and the funding to it will be transferred to the National Literacy and Numeracy Strategy. At post-primary, the retention of the 19 to 1 pupil-teacher ratio masks the consequences of the effective abolition of the post of guidance counsellor. Up to now, guidance posts were allocated on an ex-quota basis, whereas from now on, schools will have to plan for guidance from within their 19 to 1 allocation. The effect of this measure is that the majority of schools will lose one post from their initial allocation next year. Fee-paying post-primary schools will see a one-point increase in their pupil-teacher ratio, but this is only expected to impact on 50 state-paid posts in those schools. Disadvantaged post-primary schools who are part of the DESH scheme will have a new improved pupil-teacher ratio of 18.25 to 1, but they'll still be affected by the loss of the legacy posts mentioned earlier and the ongoing withdrawal of language support hours, which are being incorporated into the school's overall resource allocation. To go to the official teacher numbers provided by the Department of Education and Skills, next year there'll be an increase of 250 whole-time posts in primary schools, but a loss of 450 posts in post-primary. Turning to higher education now, there'll be a 2% reduction in pay and non-pay funding for third-level institutions next year, with similar reductions due in 2013 and 2014. The student contribution, why don't we just call it fees, will rise by €250 to €2,250 next autumn, but the government expects about 41% of students to be exempt. Student grants will be reduced by 3% from the 1st of January 2012, and there'll be no maintenance grants for new postgraduate students. The cost of school transport at primary level is to double from next September, and the family maximum will similarly rise from €120 to €220. In terms of reaction to the budget, the INTO's Central Executive Council met on Friday, and the union is to seek an urgent meeting with Education Minister Rory Quinn to discuss what the union describes as seriously flawed decisions, including staffing arrangements for small schools and DESH schools. The INTO says it'll be meeting with officials of the department this week, given the urgency of the situation. The largest second-level teachers' union, the ASTI, reacted strongly to news of further cuts to frontline teaching posts. In a letter to Minister Rory Quinn, the union's General Secretary Pat King pointed out that Section 9 of the Education Act obliges schools to make provision for guidance. As a result, Mr. King says, it's other subject areas, such as modern languages or science subjects, that are most likely to be dropped from the curriculum. The TUI's General Secretary Peter McMenamin also warned of the dangers of a stripped-down guidance service and warned that students would end up dropping subjects like higher maths, physics and chemistry as a result of their legal obligation to provide guidance. For its part, the Irish Farmers Association said that the increase in school transport costs at primary level would add to the hardship facing farm families. The IFA's countryside spokesman, Eddie Downey, said that farm families have been very vocal over the last year, strongly opposing the introduction of fees, and the decision by the government to double fees demonstrates its refusal to hear their concerns. And that is the update on this year's budget measures in education. Sean.
Thanks for that, Barry. And Barry Hennessy will be back at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website insideed.com. Listening to music is a major pastime for many of us. It provides a background to our daily activities, whether we're running or driving, eating or shopping. It seems to require little effort. Yet listening to music occupies an important place on the music curriculum at both primary and post-primary school levels. I wanted to find out more about how teachers can engage students in listening to music. Yvonne Higgins is a music educator at the Marino Institute of Education, where she prepares prospective primary teachers to teach music. I met up with Yvonne recently and asked her to tell me all about how a teacher might explore a piece of music with children in school. I began by asking her why listening to music is on the school curriculum.
If you think about the nature of music and how music works, it actually is something that you can't look at. It's invisible and it's a sonic art form. So in order to engage with it at all, listening is involved. In terms of the activities that children are engaged in, it's one of the three main ways in which they engage with music in our curriculum. But in fact, it's the key activity where music is involved, because in order to perform a song or to perform music with other people, listening is part of it. If you want to invent your own music, listening is part of it. It is the key way in which we engage with music.
I suppose most of us are used to hearing music in so many places. Even say when we go to the supermarket now, we'll hear music all around us. But I imagine you're thinking about something different when you're talking about listening to music in the primary school.
Yes. If you think about how we listen to music, in a way we've learned to listen or not to listen to music. It's part of our sonic environment. We, as you say, it's in supermarkets, it's in banks, it's all around to such an extent that we kind of sometimes become unaware of it. And our job then in primary school is to actually open children's ears or to alert them to how music might work or how it sounds. And I think one way in which the curriculum tries to do that is by having two strand units under the heading of listening and responding. And one of them has to do with exploring sounds. And that's kind of particular to our curriculum, that we explore sounds with children from junior infants right up to sixth class. And it's, if you like, it's a great way in. That if you kind of explore individual particular sounds, then when it comes to talking about music, you have a language or a vocabulary or a way of thinking around which to use when listening to pieces of music.
So what does it mean when the curriculum refers to exploring sounds? What does that mean?
I suppose exploring the different types of sounds that are out there. And just as I say that, I'm thinking about how composers very often use different types of sounds in their music. Nowadays, technology is being used in music making in quite revolutionary ways, in a way that in the past something else might have been revolutionary. If instrument makers making new instruments would have driven the kind of things that were being used by composers. In our curriculum, there are four different types of sounds that are mentioned: environmental sounds, vocal sounds, body percussion, and instrument sounds. And when I say instruments, that includes the percussion box of instruments that primary school children would have direct access to, and also instruments of the orchestra and instruments from around the world.
And exploring, is that listening to them and describing what they hear, or is it more than that?
Yes, it is listening to them. Yes, it is describing, but it's trying to find ways to do that that are child friendly. So oftentimes it might be in the context of a story where children get to categorise, if it's talking about instrument sounds, they might get to categorise instruments according to maybe how the instruments are played. It could be to do with guessing games, and very often kind of guessing games are great for really tuning children into the particular timbre of a sound or how the sound works.
So exploring sounds is one thing, and how do you move then from that to actually listening to music? What kind of things are you listening for when you're listening to a piece of music?
I suppose the way I think about it, there are sort of two main ways in which you might bring children to pieces of music. And it kind of reflects ways of thinking about music. There's an argument as to, is music about something or is music integral in itself? Does it have meaning? And yes, there are some pieces of music that are about something, and it could be about a river or a mood. And there are other pieces of music that just stand in their own right. So I suppose when you're looking at how to bring children to pieces of music, it's in designing responses that the children will have, or that opportunities for responses that they might have, that you can actually bring them to the music. I'm thinking about movement. If you play a piece of music for young children particularly, they move. They do it instinctively. It's interesting to think about how something that is so instinctive to a young child, as adults sometimes we don't move and we're kind of shy about it. And I think that's something that in the curriculum now, it's called the listening and responding. And that response, it's a way of how do you actually notice what's happening in a piece of music. And very often movement is the closest way we have of mimicking what's happening in the music.
And apart from moving, what other ways might children respond to music in the classroom?
Well, going back to what I said about two sort of separate ways of thinking about it, it could be that they listen to a piece of music with and make associations with it. So sometimes they'll hear a piece of music and it'll remind them of other things. And if you like, that's what we can capitalise on, that by thinking about what sort of things can we ask them to do. Could we ask them to let that music inspire a piece of writing or a poem, or create another piece of art in reaction to the piece, if you like, or in response to it? Questioning is really important there, I would say. That in listening, I'm just thinking of one particular piece, say from Harry Potter. There's a piece called The Night Bus. And I've used that with children and adults. And when they listen to it, they don't immediately recognise it as coming from that particular film. But they certainly get the sense of suspense, of maybe a chase. Sometimes they talk about cartoons because of the particular sounds the music uses. Sometimes they talk about detective and a robber. But whatever it is that associations it strikes, it gives them a way into writing a story. When you compare what the different ideas people had, there are common themes, if you like, that suspense is there. And that comes from how the music operated or how the music worked. On the other hand, then, you can listen to pieces of music based on the experience you've had in other areas of the curriculum. So you can be listening for something in particular. And one thing that strikes me is the idea of an ostinato pattern. So what's an ostinato pattern? It's like a repeated pattern that might be there in the music. Very often it's a rhythmic pattern, it could have a melody, but composers use that as a device when it's kind of part of their repertoire of what they can do in putting a piece of music together. And it can be interesting to listen to a piece that uses it in a particular way and creates a particular atmosphere or mood, and that can be an interesting one to work with.
You mentioned there, Yvonne, using music from a soundtrack in a film. Are there other genres of music, like, say, traditional pop, classical, folk and so on, that are good or not so good to use when children are learning to listen to music?
Two things I'd react to there is, the first one is yes to the first half of the question, and the other is the idea of what's good to use. I suppose one of the great things about the curriculum that we have at the moment is that we're free to introduce children to music from all around the world, from different places around the world, and often also from different places in time. So that because of the advances in technology, we can actually give children opportunities to hear music that might have been sung in the 1200s, or hear music from countries that are far away. Again, the challenge for us, I think, is to find ways of introducing children to that music, how to draw them into it. It's to find the key. And that's where, if you look at the responses, the different types of responses that are available to us, that's one way. And the other way is to look at musical concepts. What are there any elements being used in this music that are particularly striking that we could focus in on?
And if we get on then to the classroom, to a lesson, what might a listening to music lesson be like?
To answer that, I'd say it depends on the children, their personalities, if you like, and their previous experience, and it depends on the particular piece. Again, in terms of age group, it could be that what you might listen to a particular piece for different purposes. So I'm thinking of one particular piece, it's called a clog dance, it's from a ballet, and in it the there is a wooden instrument that's played and it sort of interrupts the flow of the other music. So if you like, a wooden instrument gets a solo. And just going back to what we said earlier about the way you might investigate instruments with children, if they had a guessing game where they had to work out which instrument they could hear, was it a wooden one, was it a metal instrument, could it have been a drum? And you say, well, one of the instruments we were guessing is playing in this piece, and could you show me that you recognise this instrument by maybe standing or putting their hand up or playing along with it, miming playing along with it? So that could be one way of working with that piece. For older children, it might be that they might try and show through movement how the piece moves or how the piece works. If you like, a piece starts and continues, and dance or movement is very close to that. They could try and map the piece on a piece of on paper. How would they symbolise how the piece works on paper? So it's kind of interesting how you can revisit a piece for different purposes.
How long should an excerpt that of music that children listen to, how long should it be, Yvonne?
Again, depending on the children's experience and on the particular piece of music, it could be, say, for infants, 30 seconds, 40 seconds. A lot can happen in a piece of music in that sort of relatively short amount of time. The other thing I'd say is that we shouldn't feel that we have to listen to the whole of a piece of music. If you want to get children to really listen attentively and to attend to the piece of music and stay with it, it might be that you'll pick a small excerpt sort of 30, 40 or maybe a minute from the beginning of a piece or from the middle of a piece just to highlight some particular aspect, and that they would have really focused listening to that. And then longer pieces can be used for other purposes. For example, if children were composing and they were working with the idea of morning or working with the idea of a river, that kind of programme music, they could then listen to the music of another composer and say, well, this person tried to convey the same mood or the same concept that we tried. What was our thinking? What were we trying to symbolise? Were we looking for particular sounds? What did we do with them? Well, let's listen and see, did this person do the same kind of thing or do they do different things, and kind of be able to critique the piece as a co-author or a co-writer or a co-composer, I should say, in thinking.
So you've partly answered my next question, but I'm wondering about when you ask the children to listen, are there particular words that they might use when they're talking about what they're listening for or what they hear when they listen to the piece of music?
I suppose that depends on the question. And language can be tricky when you're working with music. There's a philosopher who talks about the feelingfulness of music, that we actually understand music or respond to it both cognitively and emotionally and aesthetically. So words sometimes don't capture everything that we notice. And there's something you very often see in literature about music education, is that children very often, they know so much more than they can tell. So that again would be the reason for looking for different ways of responding, whether that's through movement, whether it's through drawing, whether it's, I suppose I should say as well, that where do they acquire the language? Well, they get it from us in terms of modelling, but they develop that language in exploring sounds, hence the emphasis on exploring sounds in the documents, that it's in finding a word to describe a particular sound. Sometimes that can become subjective. I remember playing a cabasa once for a group of fourth class and saying, what kind of sound is that? And one child said, annoying. And I thought, well, actually, okay, well, why is it annoying? Is it because it's a rasping sound or a grating sound? Or what particular quality of that sound is it?
And what is a cabasa?
It's an instrument very often used in South America. It's sound is produced by scraping. If you think about it, it has a wooden handle, it has a cylindrical part with what could be described loosely as a necklace type beads on a metal string, that kind of, when it's rotated against and rubbed against a corrugated piece of metal, it makes an interesting grating, rasping sound.
And presumably children would listen to this excerpt more than once in a lesson.
Absolutely. And but that's another key thing about music, is that listening is a huge skill, but so also is memory. If you think about language, if you have a poem, you can kind of refer back to it, and you might have it in front of you. If you think about a painting, you can draw somebody's attention to the top right-hand corner. With a piece of music, because of how music operates, once you've listened to it, it's over, it's gone. And you're working with what you remember of it. So yes, repeated listenings are really important. And I suppose trying to find different reasons for listening. So one might be to keep a beat. And there are games like Beat Detective where one child is on and keeping the beat on different body parts while the rest copy, and some lucky or unfortunate, depending on how you think about it, person has to figure out who's keeping the beat. That could be one reason you'd listen for it. Another might be for particular instruments, or it could be for patterns. It could be to inspire a story. But in each way that you approach the piece, and again, depends on the piece, you come to know it very well. And kind of that's invaluable when working with different pieces.
How important is it to know about the life of the composer of a piece of music, or the title or the story behind a piece of music, if there is one?
Interesting question, because I suppose if we're not careful, we could put a huge emphasis on who the composer was, where the composer came from, how many children the composer had, what type of work they did, and lose sight of the actual music that we want to work with. There's a writer called Keith Swanick in the UK who came up with, he called it CLASP, a model for music education. And he was looking at what are the really crucial things. And it reminds me of sort of talking with students about, well, if you were to list all the jobs it's possible to have in relation to music, what would they be? And they would come up with lots of different types of occupations. And when we peel them all back to say, well, what's the actual musical engagement in any of those? Can we peel back and pin down what is it these people do? It boils down to composing, listening and performing. Swanick would say that, you know, skills are important too, but they're almost secondary. They develop from those three activities and they feed into them. And the other, knowledge about the particular time period, maybe knowledge about instruments, knowledge about, also feeds into your understanding. But if you don't engage in the three main ways of activity, you're losing sight of that particular thing that is engaging with music.
Yvonne, you've brought along a piece of music for us to listen to today. Can you tell me a little bit about the piece of music we're going to hear?
I bought a piece by Holst. It's the Planet Suite, and Suite being a collection of pieces. So he wrote a piece, or he composed a piece inspired by each of the different planets. And the first one is Mars. And the reason I'm playing that for you now is that I remember working with this with children and playing it for them without telling them what the title was, and asking them to think about, if they had to choose a title, what would they pick? Or what adjectives — we've been working on adjectives in English — what adjectives would they use to describe this piece? And just while I'm on that, I'm kind of thinking, what other ways do I have to ask them, what's the mood of this piece, or what's the character of this piece? So it could be, if this piece was being used for a film, what would be happening on screen when this music is heard? So it's kind of just trying to phrase in different ways. And it was really interesting. And one thing I used to do, and sort of would advise people to do, is that when children give you words, to write them down, because they're very often very honest and heartfelt. And sometimes you can take the vocabulary that they use and marry that to other vocabulary that we might want to use from a music point of view, and put the two together. In response to this piece, when children listened, they said, it sounds like danger, it's war, it sounds like you know, the enemy's approaching. They had lots of very excited. I remember one child saying, it's Jaws, like, you know, that's not the same music, but you know, when the shark was approaching, it was that kind of, it was danger. And I thought, yeah, okay. So they all picked up on that sense of tension and drama. And when they had chosen the name or talked, you know, figured out what they thought it might be about as well, some composer thought about creating that mood. How did he do it? Like, what's in the music? What makes it? How do the sounds work to make us feel that? And that was when we discovered there was actually a pattern that starts very low down. And then more and more instruments of the orchestra join in playing that pattern, and it gets louder. So that composer exploited dynamics. He also used that device of an ostinato pattern. He used brass instruments. So his choice of particular instruments, that's using timbre. It was interesting then to tell them, well, actually, that piece is called Mars. It's about a planet. But the planet's name was inspired by the god of war. So that whole way of thinking linked in. Recently, I was talking with somebody else who was exploring the idea of conflict in music. and took the idea of, okay, that piece could be used. We could figure out that there's an ostinato pattern being used there. We could talk about, say, particular conflicts in history. Let's think about, say, World War II. Take the names of countries on different sides of the divide. Could we create rhythm patterns from those countries? Could we have a situation where you have one pattern that represents the Allies and one pattern for the other side? Could we get them, start them coming from two distances? So maybe they might be quiet starting off. It might get louder as it continues. It's just listening to music when it's vibrant and alive can lead in lots of different directions. And that's the beauty of being a primary school teacher, where you actually know these children, you meet them for 5 hours on a daily basis, and you can kind of track their thinking. You know what they're doing in other subjects at a time. So listening can be really exciting.
And now we'll listen to an excerpt from Mars, the Bringer of War, from Holt's Planet Suite. And that was an excerpt from Mars, the Bringer of War, from Holt's Planet Suite, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, closing my interview with music educator Yvonne Higgins from the Marino Institute of Education. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest, Yvonne Higgins, and to my colleague, Barry Hennessy. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.